Fantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Nefrura, the Pharaoh's Daughter, a novel by Melena Evans, narrated by Michelle Williams. Part 1. 1. In the end, everyone's heart will be weighed. Some will be heavier than the feather of truth. Those hearts will be crushed by the sharp teeth of the goddess Amit, the devourer. For the poor souls whose lives have rendered their hearts heavy, death is a sad ending. But for those whose hearts are light enough to balance the scales, death is a beginning, a door to a new eternal life, a life free of unruly bodies and controlling mothers and cruel boys who think they're men. Fortunately, as the god's wife of Amun, I'm rich in opportunities to serve my people and lighten my heart, especially on sacred festival days like today.
"Gut in, Nefrura," Mother jeers, although I'm not sure why. The tight shift dress I wear already squeezes my stomach in as far as it goes. Plus, she's standing in front of me, as usual. She can't possibly see me with that towering crown balanced on her head. I swallow the angry retort that stings my tongue and shift my shoulders back, looking out at the crowd of raucous revelers that filled the streets of Waset, waiting for the procession to begin. Amun, the god I serve, faces me and the high priest as we stand side by side behind Pharaoh, my mother. The god's golden statue is hidden inside a shrine that rests atop his ship-shaped float, which is covered in gold foil and encrusted with gemstones. Golden ram figureheads are fixed on the prow and stern. Behind Amun, his wife, Mut, and son, Khonsu, wait hidden inside their own lavish shrines. The crowd stretches behind them as far as I can see. The divine triad will soon be carried by priests in parade, cheered on by the crowd and musicians and acrobats. They'll cross the river to visit the mortuary temples of the ancestors. Their ultimate destination is Jezer Jesseru, Mother's Temple of millions of years. To prepare Amun for such a public spectacle, I spent my morning bathing the golden statue in precious aromatics and dressing him in the finest linens and most extravagant jewels. All the while, the people were enjoying bread and beer as dancers and musicians entertained them. It's been a long day already. Finally, the priests lift the gods onto their shoulders on long cedar poles, and the parade begins. The musicians redouble their efforts. A cacophony of trumpets weaves around the chanting of priestesses who work for my estate, their bodies cloaked in white linen robes, lotus flowers tucked into braids and belts, their chins held high. The air is heavy with scents, a heady mix of cooked meat, perspiration, and blossoms. Amun, Mut, and Khonsu will be doused in a rainbow of colorful flowers as they move through the city. The ankh-shaped bouquets, fashioned by hand and thrown by the people, will soak up the god's spirit before being gathered back up and placed in tombs and at gravesites in private family celebrations later tonight.
"It took them long enough to get moving," Mother turns to me as the parade shifts away, wiping her face with a linen cloth. Imagine the scandal if someone spotted Pharaoh with a dewy brow.
"I do hope you're prepared to service the god again tonight, Nefrura."
"Of course I am, Mother." As a woman, Mother is a rarity among pharaohs, and I'm no typical princess. My mother, the great Hatshepsut, has no queen, so it falls to me as the king's eldest daughter, lady of Upper and Lower Kemet, and mistress of the two lands, to perform the queenly duties, which include serving as Kemet's most powerful priestess, a role I've managed since I was a young girl. At first, I didn't believe I could succeed as the god's wife of Amun. But over time, I've earned the trust of the priesthood and expanded the wealth and influence of the House of Adoratrice
beyond even the lofty heights it reached during Mother's tenure, before Father passed and she climbed onto the throne. Mother has no reason to doubt my abilities or my dedication. It's not as if this is my first festival.
We're in for a night of revelry.
Sinanmut strides up wearing a friendly smile. A handsome man with long legs and a lean build. Sinanmut is my royal tutor and Mother's steward, treasurer, and lover. I'm not supposed to know that last bit, but their love affair is the worst kept secret in a court full to bursting with poorly kept secrets.
Kemet will be teeming with new babies by the time we celebrate again next year.
Let's hope the lands are fertile.
Dimples slice through the priest's chubby cheeks as his eyes follow a remarkably nimble acrobat, her bare body flipping so fast it makes me dizzy to watch.
They will be, Mother intones.
If she says so, it must be true. Mother takes good care of the gods, so they take good care of Kemet. She's worked to ensure festivals like today's are more opulent than ever, so the land will be bountiful when the river rises again.
We have some time until we meet the gods at Jesser Jesseru,
Sinanmut tells Mother.
The royal pleasure barge is prepared to serve us while we cross back to the west bank.
Mother nods, just enough to agree to Sinanmut's agenda, without tilting the two large plumes rising from her gold diadem, one of several headdresses she'll don throughout the day. The four of us walk toward the sacred parts of the temple, reserved for the priesthood, to let the crowd disperse before we venture to the barge. Sinanmut and the high priest are both gifted at meaningless chit-chat. I'm barely listening to the priest babble about the tomb he's building, when Mother's old handmaid breaks protocol, rushing up to slip a scroll into Mother's hands, then dash off again. Mother scowls as she rolls it open, reading it with pursed lips. She curses under her breath, then crushes the papyrus in her fist.
Tutmos is coming to Wasit.
Her tone is icy. A chill runs down my spine. My half-brother has rarely visited the primary palace since Mother tossed him from court as a child.
Is he?
The high priest is blissfully unaware of the enmity that brews in my family.
What a shame Tutmos wasn't able to make it for today's festival. Imagine both pharaohs together before the gods.
Yes, Mother is droll. Imagine. I clasp my hands behind my back, trying to mask the tingle of trepidation that flows from my head to my toes. Although we were once close, Tutmos decided years ago that he'd rather be enemies than friends. Our early childhood camaraderie, playing in the kitchens and running the grounds, turned hostile and cold. Now he hates me, which is one reason Mother keeps her co-pharaoh in name only, Bless Amun, busy training with the army and hobnobbing with low-level foreign bureaucrats in Min Nefer, so he's isolated, both from the court and Kemet's true political power. The rich priesthood I serve. After all, Tutmos is not Mother's son. He's the heir of my father, dead more than a decade. And now, apparently, my perpetually aggrieved half-brother is ready to come home.
It will be good to have him back,
Sinanmut lies, while with the diplomatic skills that led my tutor from the lower rungs of society to the top, he puts a hand on the priest's shoulder and steers him away from me and Mother, with talk of wine from the islands of the Great Green Sea awaiting us on the barge. My tutor is giving me time to gather myself and act the proper god's wife. I suspect he's worried Mother will break out her crook and flail and beat me if I don't calm my breathing and settle the jitters running through my limbs. I'm managing well enough until the priest, who's toddled a few steps away, rubbing his bald head, turns back to me and says,
"Don't worry too much about him, Adoratrice. You are an excellent god's wife. The priesthood will stand up for you. We won't back down."
The tingles swell. The priest returns his attention to Sinimut, and I turn to Mother.
Back down from what?
In lieu of an answer, Mother glares at me. Her flinty eyes are ringed flawlessly in coal, a nod to her vanity, and a failed effort to pull attention away from her double chin and crooked nose, a nose I have the misfortune to share.
What is the priest talking about, Mother?
I push forward, testing my luck.
Is Thutmose up to something?
That boy is always up to something, Nefrura.
You know how desperate he is to pull power away from us, your estate above all.
If it were up to Thutmose, the military would feast while the house of Adoratrice and the people starve.
She's right, of course. It's no surprise that Thutmose wants to diminish my power. He detests me, and he blames the position I hold for Mother's rise to the throne. For good reason. She was able to take and hold power in large part because of the riches and loyalty she earned as God's wife, a loyalty I have only nourished. I curl my hands into fists and breathe, reminding myself that the heart pulsing inside my body will one day determine my fate, its blood and tissue made light or heavy by my lifetime of decisions. I squeeze my eyes shut and see an image of the devourer examining my heart, blood dripping from her razor-sharp teeth. Thutmose stands before the goddess, pressing his fat thumb on the scale, forcing the pan to dip. Amit, realizing my heart now outweighs the feather, snaps her sharp teeth, and my eyes fly open. Mother lifts a haughty brow as if she's seen my vision and judged it unseemly. Perhaps she has. She is the embodiment of the god on earth, after all.
What aren't you telling me? I try again.
There are many things I don't tell you, Nefrura, and still, miraculously, you seem to know all you need to know.
She turns away, beckoning for Sinimut and putting an end to another futile conversation. As my tutor and the priest wander back toward us, she shares a final piece of advice.
Do tread carefully around Thutmose's daughter. He is reckless, and reckless men are never to be trusted.
I feel the frustration grow in my chest, the potent irritation at missing information and unsolved riddles, and I turn to Sinimut. His eyes are warm with concern as he lifts a hand to his ear and tugs once, one of our secret signals. We concocted them when I was a child. Tapping your forehead 3 times means someone is lying. Tugging both ears means you know something about the topic at hand you'll explain later, in private. Scratching your head with your left hand means you think the person speaking is a fool. The ear tug is unique. It doesn't translate easily into words. It's more of a feeling, a kind of pep talk. It means something like, we can do this. Let's make it work. But I'm not a child anymore. Small gestures won't satiate me, and news that Thutmose is on his way certainly can't be quashed by an ear tug. Mother, Sinimut, and the high priest jabber about some small skirmish between 2 venerated priests at the Temple of Ta in Menefer as my head spins, worrying over what Thutmose could be up to. My half-brother's plans may be opaque, but they're also imminent. He's probably sailing toward Waset now as we chant hymns and pour wine and cater to the needs of the gods, as the people gather flowers and drink beer and visit the tombs of their ancestors, begging the dead to give them wisdom, or revenge, money, or fertility. The thought reminds me how important the work we do today is. The regeneration of the land depends on me, especially on festival days. If I fail the god, creation could collapse, the sun could vanish, the river could run dry, plants and animals could wither and disappear, leaving nothing for the people to eat. I can't waste time worrying about Thutmose now.
I take a final deep breath and banish him from my mind. Thoughts of my rogue half-brother won't hijack the day. Closing my eyes, I utter a quick prayer. Mighty God, I am your servant. Forgive my mind for wandering. Amun, sacred of arm, regenerate the land we love. Show the people Mother's rule is right and blessed, and let the crops be bounteous. Also, powerful Amun-Ra, bull of your mother, if it pleases you, let Thutmose choke on a chicken bone and drop dead before he gets here and disrupts the good work we do together. The clickety-clack of Iset's sandals slapping against the stone floor grows faster and closer at my back, like my handmaid is rushing to catch up before I pass through my quarters doors and leave her behind, as if I could. With few exceptions, Iset is glued to me like tar to a ship's hull. Kamut's presence, on the other hand, is less predictable. I suck in my gut and lift my head higher when I see him standing guard at my door. He doesn't notice me, not in the way I wish he would, but I see him. Only a year older than me, he's the youngest of my guards, and he's handsome, tall and broad, eyes deep and dark when they flicker my way. Even the scar that crosses his cheek from the corner of his left eyebrow to the bottom of his left ear is interesting. That doesn't stop me from squirming every time I see it. The scar is my fault, after all. He drops his eyes as I approach. Eye contact between a princess and her guard is forbidden. He and my pretty handmaid, on the other hand, are free to gaze into each other's eyes all they like. I imagine Kamut and Iset smiling at each other behind my back. I'm so certain they're mocking me, I almost whirl around to confront them. But of course, I don't. Mother says lashing out is a sign of weak character. The door shuts behind me as Kamut's staff bangs against the floor, twice fast, once slow. It's another of the signals Sininmut and I invented years ago. This one means my tutor is in my study, waiting for me. Finally, my questions will be answered. If I'm lucky, the god heard my prayers and Sininmut is about to announce that Thutmose was gored by a crocodile, or drowned in the river, or got stung by a particularly vicious scorpion on his way here. I move faster, rushing past my receiving room, weaving around cedar chairs and golden stools through my bedroom, where Iset busies herself with my wardrobe, and into the small study I've set up in the back of my quarters. It used to be a dressing room. Now it's stuffed floor to ceiling with scrolls. Like my bedroom, the study is open to my pool and deck with its picturesque view. The blue of my small pool, surrounded by palm trees and drenched in lotus blossoms, contrasts with the calm, green waters of Ituru, the river that gives Kemet life, floating past two stories down. My desk is situated so that the breezes keep me cool as I review ledgers and copy the words of our wise men, dipping my brush into water, then wetting the ink cake, red or black, before painting onto papyrus.
You're late.
My tutor is perched in his favorite high-backed chair that sits facing my desk, one leg propped on the other so his ankle rests on his knee. He wears his favorite wig, falling in wavy black curls to his shoulders, and a sheer top with intricately pleated sleeves that match his skirt. A broad gold collar, inlaid with carnelian scarab beetle, girdles his neck. You've been avoiding me, I retort, sinking onto the stool by his feet, still cross that he turned away from me after yesterday's parade to disappear into the revelry. His smile is sly.
Never.
You have been, and you know it. You knew I wanted to speak with you, so you dashed off. I tried to talk to you again last night, but you were stuck to Mother like sand to the desert. I'm surprised you didn't cancel today's session.
You would have tracked me down,
he deadpans. Yes, I agree. I would have. I hope this means you're ready to tell me what Tutmos is up to.
Sinenmut's sparkle dims. He lifts his slim shoulders.
The same as ever. Chaos and spectacle.
I think of Tutmos's usual antics. Poking foreign bureaucrats to create drama Mother must manage, or siphoning resources from the Temple of Ta to reward his band of petty followers, and I shake my head.
I don't think so. His spectacle usually occurs far from court. He's coming here without even being summoned. Mother was surprised he's on his way. That's new. She seemed more bothered by news of him than usual, and she refused to tell me what the priest meant when he said they'd stand by me. Why would I need that?
Sinenmut folds his arms.
It can hardly come as a surprise that Tutmos is interested in your position. He's always working against you, even when he's doing nothing at all. There's nothing new about that. But he's no match for you and the god. You know you're going to serve Amun faithfully, running off to temple at dawn each morning, no matter what Tutmos does. Remember when you were ill? The doctor ordered you to sleep in and you simply ignored him.
The doctor is no pharaoh.
Sinenmut's smile turns snide. It says what he'd never say aloud. Tutmos isn't much of a pharaoh either. In theory, the throne belongs to Tutmos as much as it belongs to Mother. In reality, Mother rules every cubit of the two lands, every peasant and patrician. Even the gods no longer outrank her. She's declared herself their equal, the living conduit through which Amun speaks. Tutmos is a mere soldier in comparison.
Stop avoiding the question, I snap. You can't distract me with compliments anymore. You know the specifics around Tutmos' visit. Is there a reason you think I don't deserve to know as well?
Sinenmut sags, reaching out to cup my cheek in his palm. Although touching a royal is punishable by death for most people, the rule does not apply to Mother's paramour.
You are correct, as usual, dear one. But it's nothing, really. We've just heard word that Tutmos has been making the rounds. He's visiting nobles. He's whispering in their ears. We believe he's attempting to poison them against your influence. He tells them the god's wife estate has too many priestesses, that the house of the Adoratrice has too much power, that you spend too much
feeding the people,
I interrupt, bitterness rising in my throat.
Correct. But since when has Tutmos cared about the people?
I stand to pace, fingers digging into my palms.
Is Mother planning to stop him? Or is she going to let him damage the estate she once managed?
I'm sure she has a plan.
I pivot. What plan?
She is the omnipotent one, dear one. Not me. We both know my abilities to predict are...
He pauses.
Limited.
I scoff. Sinenmut is Mother's one true love. She didn't love my father, who was, by all honest accounts, a weak man with a fragile hold on power. The court pretends Father was a mighty pharaoh, just like they pretend not to notice that Sinenmut and Mother are lovers. Still, it's clear, Sinenmut doesn't know what Mother intends, so I try a different approach.
Are the nobles swayed by his arguments?
Sinenmut taps long fingers against his bony knees.
A few agree that the resources you wield are excessive, but most see only the good you do. It doesn't hurt that you've managed to promote women from virtually every noble family in Kemet. You've earned loyalty from Swinit to Perwajet. I don't believe the nobles will side with Tutmos over you and your mother, and the priesthood is fiercely loyal to you both.
And the military?
Sinenmut pauses, weighing his words.
The military respects Tutmos, but they also respect your mother. They won't take sides. Not now, anyway.
He crosses his arms.
Tutmos can't hurt you, dear one.
Yet, I twirl and march back across the small room, only to spin and pace my steps again. But it's only a matter of time until Mother has to give Tutmos some real power. He's not a child anymore. and we both know he'll use whatever influence he gathers against me.
You may try.
Sinanmut's head swivels back and forth, tracking my march.
And you are right. Your mother does have some difficult decisions to make. Her current strategy, treating Tutmos like the spoiled little boy he once was, is unsustainable. I suspect that's why news of Tutmos feels more salient now.
He sighs.
You may not see it, but your mother's hardships.
Hardships? I interrupt. His eyebrows inch up.
You can't believe it was easy for her to capture the throne.
Hatshepsut faced more battles than you can imagine.
The pressure to be perfect pushes her forward still. Unlike the pharaohs before her, your mother has no room for mistakes. You can't imagine what she's been through. From the vitriol she faced as a young woman to a painful marriage.
Why doesn't she tell me this herself? I slow my steps, curious. Sinanmut's eyes soften, his voice turning tender.
Because she can't afford to show weakness. It's entirely possible she's forgotten how.
Talking to her daughter is weakness? He shrugs.
She protects you in her own way. If it weren't for the trials she survived when she was your age, I suspect she'd have followed the family tradition and married you off to your half-brother years ago.
The thought stops me in my tracks. I lean against my desk, steadying myself. What a terrible custom. It's true, although the gods themselves invented it, of course. Every pharaoh is the embodiment of the god Horus, son of brother-sister duo Isis and Osiris. That doesn't mean I want to marry Tutmos. I don't even want to think about where I'd be if Mother hadn't put an end to the brother-sister marriages my ancestors survived. Tutmos and I are both past marriageable age. But if he were married to me, the only princess, daughter of two pharaohs, and the god's wife of Amun, he'd have an immediate link to the priesthood. Were I to give him a child, a future pharaoh, Tutmos's prestige would outshine even Mother's, which is, of course, the reason she put an end to the family tradition. Sinanmut turns pensive.
It kept power in the family, to be sure. But yes, it was an unfortunate custom.
I'm tempted to ask what he thought of my father, a subject we generally avoid. But before I form the words, Sinanmut stops brooding and leans forward.
I know it looks gloomy, dear one, but it has been a long time since you and Tutmos spent time together. You're both older now. Perhaps it's not as bad as it seems, and word from the nobles is just silly gossip. Maybe the two of you can find a way to work together. He is a pharaoh, and as you say, he won't be powerless forever. In spite of his recent activities, I'd advise you to try and make peace. He might surprise you.
Sinanmut rubs his chin, signaling that he's about to impart some riddled wisdom.
Remember what the great wise man Tahotep said? No one can be born wise.
And some who are born never become wise, I think. But my tutor wants to cheer me, and I don't want to let him down. So I swallow the words, offer him a smile, and hold out a palm to receive today's scroll. Iset's brown eyes sparkle with delight as she runs her fingers over the gossamer fabric of my newest gown.
The linen is so thin, and all these pleats. It's perfect.
She drapes the diaphanous material over my arms, fastening it just under my breasts, which to my horror seem extra plump today. She spins in a circle. Her eyes roam over my large bedroom like it's the first time she's seen it. Iset has always been one to marvel at pretty things, and the lavishness of the palace inspires awe, even in those of us who were born to it. I glance around at the painted scenes of Kemet's plants and wildlife on my walls, the 8 marble pillars stretching from my floor, drenched in rich carpets, to the ceiling, spotted with golden stars, wondering what Iset's old house was like. Most royal handmaids are old noble women, but Iset, presented to me by Sinanmut on my 15th birthday, is common. Her mother, a peasant, died birthing her second child. A brother, Iset only knew.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?